Well, all three of the facilities that you just saw, the Student Publications Building, the Health Center, and Einstein Bagels in this building, were all built in the absence of any state funding, any money generated from tuition or any other revenue source that we struggle with. The Student Publications Building was built primarily with private gift support from journalism alumni. There is some institutional support in there in terms of our construction budget. The Health Center was built entirely as an auxiliary with revenues generated by that program to pay the debt service on the building, the bond that was sold to build that building. That was an agency bond. From the good business practices of our health services as a business enterprise that has to be focused on health care. And then Einstein Bagels was built through increased revenues from our dining services contract with Aramark as we drive up the numbers and drive up the participants in our meal plans and in our food service operations. So all three were done with good business practice, charitable support, or some combination. And it's a classic example of, as Patty and I discussed at lunch, we're going to go to the state to fund our key primary academic buildings. And we're going to assure the state that we're finding other ways to get other things done as we manage an improved quality of life for our campus community, our students and faculty and staff. And those are three great examples of a much higher quality of life. Good news, publications, good health care, good dining options, all done independent of state-appropriated or tuition-generated revenue. So those are some great examples. And that allows us to go to the state to focus on buildings that are the science building, the College of Business building, the College of Education building, or on and on with our long list of academic priorities.
Well done, and good to see and experience. We're at agenda item number 6. It's a recommendation to approve the personnel actions that have transpired since January 25th, 08, at that board meeting. And all of the materials in the next 10 pages, excluding, I have an exclusion to that, that the item related to James Chappell, I guess you say his name, whose application for promotion was withdrawn prior to this meeting. So I am asking for a motion to approve with this exclusion.
So moved.
Second?
Second. I have a question.
Yes.
A lot of these people did not have salaries listed. Are these motions or changes without salary increases? Or
the adjustments will be made as a part of the budget process.
They have a current salary. These would just be additionals to.
Okay,
it'll be effective on the 1st of July for most of them. There is a promotional adjustment depending upon whether they're going from one rank to another. And that usually begins the next budget cycle.
Those are all faculty positions. As I look at this, beginning on page 49, and it goes on through page 50. Through 51.
Yeah, I'm just curious because usually the existing salary and the future salary are listed and they put a whole bunch of them, they're just blank.
So
that was my question. I don't know if that was an error, if that was some reason.
Normally their promotion amount is included at the time of the salaries for the next year forward. And there is no money attached to tenure.
Okay.
But the salary that they currently have was not listed as well, so that's why I had questions about it.
Right, I mean, it's just blank.
As well as
there was a reason for that, or if somebody hit the wrong button on the...
Or they just decided they would be, as their contract calls for, would be salaried according to their contract.
So to put the point differently, it will appear in the budget, is what you're saying,
yes,
when we see it for the June meeting?
Yes.
But it will not only include the promotional adjustment, but also any...
$500. Am I correct? All right. Thanks for asking for that clarification. Are there any other comments or questions? Hearing none, all in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. It's time, Dr. Ransel, for the President's report, an update on General Assembly by Robin.
Yes.
Robin.
You all have seen these before, but it'll be, you'll pass some that way. And we've already talked about most of the budget stuff, so I probably don't need to rehash all of that. As you know, if you just look on this sheet, this was our legislative priorities. We set those late in the year, typically by about October. I mean, they're all based on our strategic plan and things that are in the works all through the year, but we finalize this late in October, meet with our local legislative delegation, typically in November, prior to every legislative session, and go through these, provide them with a notebook with all the specific information. So just to go down this list, the first thing that you see was the base funding. We were trying to get an additional $6.5 million as we set our priorities in October in the first year, $6.6 million in the second year. That, as you know, quickly became something we weren't going to be able to accomplish, so we set out our business trying to at least take on no new budget cuts. We did end up with a 3% budget cut in addition to the cut that we already took by executive order, so a total of 6. We will, in the second year of the biennium, regain approximately $800,000, so we'll get a little bump up in the second year. They cut a little more in the first year than they did in the second year.
Provided revenue assumptions hold up in the state economy.
Well, obviously, I mean, that's what's budgeted. So anything can occur, as you know, in any given year, as in this year, where we were informed in December that we were going to have to remit 3% back to the state. So it's very possible that that could happen again, provided if revenue does not pick up the capital projects. They did not do bonded projects from the general fund for universities. We sort of hoped that they would do that. The House budget did. The Senate budget did not. In the end, the Senate budget prevailed. But what they did do, which is a bit different than they've done in years past, is they created a contingency plan list. And in the contingency plan list, they included the projects, a few projects for universities that were vetoed in the 2006 budget. Fortunately for us, all of our projects are on that contingency list. Now, the contingency plan kicks in January of 2010 if they have exceeded revenues above and beyond what's committed in the budget currently. They have the first thing that they fund are state employee and teacher salaries, in addition to what they've planned already, and then they move into bonding for the capital projects. The good news is it's about $5 million, a little more than that, that they actually need to do those projects. Believe it or not, for 6 months of debt service, that's all they need was about $5.7 million. The bad news is you've got a lot of hurdles to get to that point in the contingency plan. So, you know, I don't know how that will turn out. Obviously, I don't, regardless of what some may tell you, have a crystal ball, at least not one that works very well. So anyway, I'm not predicting that we will ever get to that point, but the good news is if they do, we're on the list. Those projects on the contingency plan under capital projects are the Science Campus Phase 3 for $9 million. The Owensboro Advanced Technology Center is a Kentucky Community Technical College System project. It is on the list for the full $14,055,000. Our Materials Characterization Center at $4.5 million is on that list, as is planning money at $5.8 million for the Gordon Ford College of Business. The Elizabethtown Central Region Center, the BRAC building, Ms. Gray will certainly understand what that is, because she's been very heavily involved in all of that, did not receive funding. There was a portion of the budget bill that included BRAC, and that was vetoed by the governor. The reason the governor vetoed that, it set up a BRAC commission. He had done so by executive order. So he vetoed the piece of the budget bill pertaining to BRAC, and his executive order will be what takes place instead. That commission will create, I don't even remember who all is on the commission, but it will do some grant funding, which we may or may not be able to apply for. Their capital renewal maintenance pool was funded. The amount of money that we were looking at, the $5.5 million, I'm not sure exactly how much of the total we will get. It won't be this much because it wasn't that high. But they did pass a capital renewal maintenance pool. That money goes to CPE, and then we match it. Not quite dollar for dollar, John. 60 cents on a dollar, is that right?
Yes.
The agency bond projects, the first four that were all vetoed projects are all provided in this budget. What that means for us is that we are authorized to issue bonds for these projects at a little bit higher amounts that are on, than what are on here. These were the original amounts that were vetoed. This is likely what we will go with in most cases, but we have a little bit more capacity from in the budget bill. They did everything with a 15% increase. So a little bit higher on Van Meter, but we can proceed as of July 1 with Van Meter, Ivan Wilson, Preston, and the North Campus parking improvements. Now, on the legislative initiatives...
Robert, before you leave the projects, we will have ready for you, and it may be at the called meeting in June when we approve a budget for next year, because these bond authorizations go into effect July 1, so we won't be able to wait until the July meeting. So as we come together to discuss and approve a budget, we will also have ready for you at that time the bond, I say documentation, to move forward with these agency bond projects, which have been funded since 2006, January 2006, and we've been using the money that we've captured with that dedicated debt service to do planning and design and do some other things, some air quality work in FAC and so forth. We will have that information ready for you at that time, and we are studying all of our options and possibilities. What the General Assembly did do also was provide agency authorization for the three projects that were under the state-funded list of the Materials Science Characterization Center of the College of Business
and the Science Campus.
And the Science Campus, $9 million of the $24 million on this card. So we now have seven projects approved for agency funds, and we're just going to have to determine what the prioritization and what the best uses for the available bond indebtedness that we have, that this board has already approved, what the best application of that will be. And how best to utilize that, knowing that the bond market has also changed with interest rates, differentials. There are a lot of factors that are different now than in 2006 when this board took that action. So we will come back to you. We're not going to exceed what you've already approved in terms of the bond debt capacity, the amount of money dedicated to the service of those bonds won't change. What we do within these bond authorizations probably will change somewhat within these seven projects, and we may devote some of that bond to planning and design money for some that we won't be able to fund with the issuing of this set of bonds, and then go back and get full state funding to complete the project in 2010, presumably. We just don't know yet. We're studying all of that right now, and Ann and her staff are doing a lot of work to see what the whole bond scenario is for these projects and how best to proceed given the capacity that we have. So I just wanted you to get some sense of that dynamic. Now that it's defined, it's going to take us a few more weeks to determine what we come back to you with precisely as a bond issue in July.
General Assembly did a couple of things, as Dr. Ransdell just mentioned, the agency bond authority on the what were previously requested as general fund projects. They did the contingency plan, but they also gave us some flexibility if we could devote university resources to any of those projects because they were of an urgent nature, not just to Western, but to all of the universities. Our general fund projects were authorized for agency bonds if we wanted to do that.
And keep in mind, we cannot use that agency authority for any other project.
Correct.
We can't choose to do it for something not among these seven or we can't use it for some other purpose or some other source. We're legislatively authorized to issue the bonds based on this board-approved debt capacity for these projects only. So, you know, we do have a little bit of flexibility within these seven. What we don't have is the option of using that bond indebtedness for any other purpose.
The other thing that they did, and I mean this is not really relevant because it's not in part of the discussion for us, but the other thing that they did, which is precedent setting, is they indicated that no university could raise tuition to fund any of their agency bond projects in this biennium. So as you all know, in the 2006 budget included a tuition variable for the campus rebuilding fee that is funding many of these projects, so that it didn't apply to those projects. But if we were, but what they wanted to prevent, they wanted to give us some flexibility, but they wanted to prevent anybody from raising tuition to cover an one of these projects with agency bonds that we weren't already anticipating to do that way. So they did not, they made it very clear that they were not interested in seeing us raise tuition for to do a project that we weren't, that we already did not have the funds to do. And you are not doing that. So just like I said, that's not really relevant other than it sets a precedent. I would have some expectation that they may come back and do that again in future budgets. On, you done on projects?
Yes.
On legislative initiatives, we had, well, three. One was to restore the state and agency bond projects vetoed. I guess we got about halfway there on that. We got the agency bond projects anyway. And then the others are, you know, on life support. That's a term we use quite a bit in Frankfurt. Something is on life support, or it's barely alive, or it's dead, which is usually the way we like it. There were two additional things we asked for. One was the authorization for the Gatton Academy of Mathematics and Science as a high school diploma-granting institution. In the final 2 days of the session, we did achieve that. What has not yet happened is the governor has not yet signed that bill. I believe he probably has two or three more days left. He's not signed several, so it's not just ours. But it did not pass as a standalone bill. It passed as an amendment to Senate Bill 2, which is the science, technology, and math. In science, technology, engineering, and math. Did I get that right, Barbara? Initiatives has primarily been a priority of the Senate the last 2 years. And last year, our academy legislation was also hitched to that bill as well. So it's still sitting there on the governor's desk waiting to be signed. But the exactly what we needed to authorize the academy to grant high school diplomas and to work with local school districts to grant joint diplomas. Everything that Tim Gott needs is in that bill for the academy to be able to take care of the students' needs as far as getting their diplomas. So we're very glad that happened. The other one, support KTRS legislation to allow the fixed contribution for the optional retirement participants. That bill did pass. That bill passed out of, it was sponsored by Senator Ken Winters, chairman of the Senate Education Committee, and has been signed by the governor. So that was that actually is about a $500,000, I won't say savings for us because the money is budgeted, but it would have certainly have been a $500,000 cost for us had it not passed. So that's very important. And a little bonus there on another bill with regard to the Kentucky Teacher Retirement System, we were able to get an amendment that allows us to offer a fourth option. Right now you can only by law offer three options under ORP, and now we can offer a fourth. It was, again, just a bonus.
Meaning a private fund manager for your retirement assets. KLEVELE-CREF or VALIC or Fidelity,
right,
which is the one that was,
Fidelity was
wanting to get on the table.
Fidelity was what's the primary
company. R3 or TIAA-CREF.
ING.
ING.
ING is the other one.
And VALIC. just a couple of other things. Obviously, Tom mentioned Bucks for Brains today. They did pass Bucks for Brains. It is, I believe, a total of $50 million for UK and U of L to split two-thirds, one-third, and then $10 million between the comprehensive universities. Tracked some 134 bills. This is my legislative tracking sheet. Only the ones with color got passed by both houses. Some are not yet signed by the governor. There were, of those 134, 23 passed and have been sent to the governor. That includes the budget bill. And just a few of note, House Bill 2 is an energy bill primarily, but tacked on to the end of House Bill 2 is this little thing called the Center for Energy Research and Environmental Stewardship. It will be housed at the Office of Energy Policy, and three universities will be represented on that board. So we were somewhat involved in writing that proposal last year, and we don't know if we'll be one of the three universities, but certainly that would be a goal for us. We'd like to be one. There was another bill that passed that required the Board of initially required the Board of Regents to use only Kentucky-grown ag products at institutions. That now only encourages that. So anyway, that's an interesting bill, and we've worked with Airmark on what we really needed for that to say. Senate Bill 157 has absolutely nothing to do initially with us. But as it ended up, Senate Bill 157 changes every reference in statute to regional universities and makes them called comprehensive universities. That was in the final days and a moral victory, if nothing else. And then one that John will, I'm sure, be involved in is Senate Bill 189. It requires the Finance and Administration Cabinet and the Council on Postsecondary Education to establish and implement a process for funding deferred and future capital renewal. So those are just a handful of bills. Many dealt with Keys funding and lots of bills on Keys this time. Poor Cindy Burnett, who was in here earlier, had a lot of legislation to review this time. Just a few things for Tony Glisson on personnel and retirement stuff. Usually that he gets a lot. He didn't have quite as many this time. Cindy had most of them. But that's kind of a snapshot. And we live to fight another day.
All right. Dr. Ransdell, our next is John Osborne, I think, with capital construction project status.
John, the way this team works is John can't really move forward with his facility staff unless Robin and her team are successful in getting support.
Okay,
I hear you.
They've been short up there.
Unless Robin gets it funded. So at any rate, we have a lot going across our campus, I hope you value taking a few minutes in each quarterly board meeting to get an update on our facilities matters, because the rebuilding of this campus is a very important priority for us and in our strategic plan and is kind of at the core of so many other things. And there's a lot that happens between quarterly board meetings from a facility standpoint and a project standpoint. So, John,
May I say something before John speaks, please? I had mentioned to John that as I parked the car and walked over how beautiful the campus looks. Within the last week, I would say I have had 10 conversations that were just random, visiting with friends who commented on coming to WKU to bring prospective students or show someone the university who hadn't seen it for some time. And all the other universities could have the programs they would want, but this campus sells the university for a lot of people. It can be that fine line decision, and how it looks is so impressive. And so to you and those who work with you and help make the university great, I always tell them, if it looks good on the outside and you've seen a transformation, know the same transformation is happening internally in the classrooms and with the teachers and the programs. But that just is the first breath of that. And so over and over again, without being on this conversation, they will bring that up to me and talk about how beautiful it is. So thank you for what you've
done. Thank you. And because of our discussion, I called Greg Fear to step in today. I wanted to have you meet Greg Fear, and I want you to meet Helen Sievers. These are two of the key people on our campus to make what you described happen. Greg is the grounds manager within our Department of Facilities Management, and Helen is our new campus landscape architect.
That's wonderful.
They're not the only people, but between these two people, they're the ones that make it happen, and there's a large team of people behind them that work every day on this campus to make it what it is. They take great pride in it, And every winter we talk about what are we going to be doing in the spring and every month leading up to commencement so that we can get the campus in the spring of the year at commencement in its best possible condition. They've been hard at it, and it's showing. And I wanted you to meet these folks who
Thank
make
you.
That possible.
Thank you.
When we talk about quality of life, it's not just for our students. And we talked earlier about some things that are very stressful for our faculty and staff right now. But when I describe quality of life, I mean it as much for the people that live here year after year after year and devote their professional lives to this place. I mean that as much for them as I do for the students. Because you've got to feel good about where you work and the environment in which you spend so much time and so much effort. And it goes way beyond personal compensation. It has a lot to do with the quality of our professional lives in and around this place as well. So the points you make for prospective students is equally important for faculty and staff, those that are here and those that are deciding whether to be here or not for jobs in the future. So it's a very important part of our psyche as an institution, and Greg and Helen and your crews, I echo that appreciation.
I picked up litter on my walk in. I'm using it.
John,
I have been in litter.
Does Greg do what Claude Threckle used to do?
Yes.
He goes back a long ways. He used to keep this campus beautiful, too.
He did.
Years ago.
I worked in the physical plant, and Claude Threckle was working out
really?
Of there.
Really? Okay.
And all of them over there. And I tell you, I hate to say this about Claude, but you've got it looking a little bit better than Claude.
There you go. There you go. That's a compliment.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, John, for having me come in.
You know, Claude Treckle is still around, not here.
In your agenda item, there is the standard report that we give you for each of your quarterly meetings. And as Dr. Ransdell's mentioned, we do cover the same projects from time to time, but what we're giving you is simply an update and a progress on where we are with those projects. And then when we complete a project, it of course falls off the list, and then we add other projects that are just getting initiated or are getting started. So this time, the report that you have has some projects that are highlighted in yellow, and those are the projects that's been added to the report, just so that you acknowledge the difference. We won't probably follow the sequence that's in your report, but rather we've got a presentation here for you today that will update you on these projects and give you what I could call a virtual tour. It lets you see where we are as best we can. So let's get right to it. We're going to cover, in just a few minutes, we're going to cover a lot of ground and a lot of part of the campus and cover 20 major projects. This is a project that's not been on the report previously, and you're looking at this going, what is it? Well, that's the steam plant. That is our central steam plant, coal-fired steam plant that heats the campus. Robin mentioned her work in the General Assembly, and one thing she did for us was get current year authorization in House Bill 406, which will allow us to immediately begin design and construction for an addition to this plant. It will be referred to as, of course, the Steam Plant Air Quality Upgrade System. Common terminology is we're adding a baghouse. And why is it called a baghouse? Well, think of it as a HEPA filter. We're going to be putting on a filtering system for the stack that will reduce the particulate level of the emission to acceptable levels for EPA. We have been notified that we cannot activate this plant again until we put this bag house and this system in place. So we are really under the gun. You'll be hearing me talk about this project further as we have further meetings, but we are in design now. Our goal, of course, is to have this plant fully functional by the start of heat season, or we're going to get cold. I think we'll make it. But we've got a good team already working on this from a design effort. The people that are working with us have already done this for other campuses in Kentucky. It's become our turn. This is a regulatory project that we must do.
The project budget is $2.6 million, and as I said, we will have that up and running in November. Right now, of course, it's shut down. Another new project that this photograph here depicts is, you can see there the steel superstructure for a building that's just coming up out of the ground getting started. There's a view of the building with Pierce Ford, of course, in the background. In this case, the photograph's taken with Douglas Keene Hall with to your back, looking at Pierce Ford and with Barnes and Bemis in the foreground. You can see that the rough end for the plumbing is in place and the infrastructure is basically getting started. There's where we're headed. That's the building that's planned for that site. That site there is between Pierce Ford and Douglas Keene in a courtyard. And this is, I might emphasize, this is not a university project. This is another one of those opportunities we have to do capital improvements through and with our partnerships. This building is being built by the Student Life Foundation that owns the residence halls, literally. The foundation, have concurred that this project has an adequate amount of benefit to our housing program and our residence life program, that they're going to finance it. So it will be built by the Student Life Foundation, leased to the university, and we will turn it over to the WKU Restaurant and Catering Group to operate. Believe it or not, even though you saw it just now coming up out of the ground with steel, we hope to have that project open and ready for use for the fall semester in August. This will be a unique standalone building. It will have four concepts under one roof. So it will be a food court. Now these are architectural renderings, of course, of what we're headed towards. There is an elevation of the interior of some of the space that is planned for this building. And this building will be serving the immediate residents of that area. There are seven residence halls that have no dining option in them. Seven residence halls with over 2,000 students who live in them. This is a project that's really near and dear to my heart, having come from the housing program as I have, when it's always been the case that these residence halls have had no dining option. The only food in that area today is vending machines. Within a 3-minute walk now, we're going to have a food court with four concepts. First of all and foremost, it will be a C-store. One section of it will be a C-store.
And another C-store is?
Oh, a convenience store. I'm sorry. A convenience store. And in that, it will have the conventional things, very similar to the C-store, convenience store we already have in Bates Runner. It will have three food concepts. It will be open for late night activity and late night serving, because that's obviously, when you look at the entire dining options for the campus, the students for the most part during the day are up on the hill, and at night they're going to be in a residence hall. So this will be an afternoon and evening venue, and the three concepts of food will be a Zoka's Mexican option, an Edie's Ice Cream Parlor, and a Popeye's chicken and biscuit option. Now, when I say Popeye's chicken and biscuit, you may not know what I'm talking about. There's only seven of those in the state of Kentucky. And I just learned yesterday that we're going to be having the first franchise for a Popeye's on a college campus in America. They have 1,500 of these franchise stores nationwide. They've been in business since 1972. They're very well known. There's seven in the city of Louisville, several in Nashville. It'll be a new blend of a Cajun menu added to the overall menu within dining services. So we're excited about that option being added to the overall venue for this fall.
That's what our students said they wanted.
Yeah. How late? Late night options, how late?
You know, I don't know that I got an hour. I just know that as long as there's going to be business, they're going to be open. Well, I don't
think... Is that 5 a.m.?
Well,
okay.
It is truly going to be a late night. obviously, the other thing I would add to this is there's going to be an outdoor seating option. And some of that may dictate what's going to happen. Meaning there may be an opportunity for it to be open late night and it be open in terms of the interior, and then similar, then it changes to a carryout venue. But there will be a lot of open air seating is what we're hoping and planning for. There is a landscape design presently underway with a company working with us for that area, working with Helen to develop it, and it will have seating. So we see this being a very much of a gathering place. One of the things, and the comment's been mentioned by Brian Kuster, our housing director, our housing reservation director, is he's a little concerned about it being so successful that it creates problems late night. So we're going to have to find a balance between what makes common sense for business as well as not his disruption. We're going to have to be careful about how we light the area so that it doesn't get too bright, but at the same time, it's lighting is attractive and creates a safety environment. So we got a lot of balancing acts to do there, so the exact hours have not been established.
Okay. One thing we're looking at with that is not clustering the seating outdoors right next to any one particular residence hall, but rather in the common area between all the residence halls, so that if there are people gathering late at night, it's not beneath someone's window.
Mm-hmm. This building, as noted, is a $2.3 million project by the Student Life Foundation. It will construct 6,272 square feet.
Wireless, Dick, wireless environment.
The whole area will be.
It already is, I think.
Outside, but I mean that specific facility.
Right.
About how many square feet in that, John?
It'll be 6,200 square feet in under roof. Okay, we walked today on our tour, and you walked by our College of Education construction site. You can see that it's changed in the last few months. And there again, I think I've shared with you before, is the site plan for the project. This being Regents, this being Normal, this being the crosswalk into the mass media building. So the proximity of the building is designed to sit there. There, once again, is the elevation of the architectural rendering of where we're headed. We are, at this point, about 45% complete with the design process, a design process that is supposed to be completed to where we can bid the building as early as August. So if things go the way we want, we will bid it in August, and we anticipate an award and a contractor being on site this fall, and then there being a two-year construction window with it completing early in the fall of 2010.
John, this front will be on Regents?
That's a normal street view.
On normal.
On normal, okay.
Yeah. Right out here.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. In other words, yeah, you theoretically, mass media is at your back as you look at the building from this direction.
Okay.
Now, you have to realize, of course, that you may have to be in or up on top of the building to get to that vantage point, but...
Yeah, right.
You can see that it is there is a distance here, I think, of about 40 or 50 feet offset from the street. So it won't be as crowding the street, so to speak. I don't
close
want to call it crowding.
There will be,
but it won't be as close to the street as mass media is
right,
presently.
Right,
so there will be some green space is the point between the street, the green space, the entrance, and the building itself.
If they ever needed to widen the street out here, we're in trouble?
Possibly. Probably not because of this building, but because of mass media.
Well, I mean, where we are.
Yeah. I see us in the long range with our master plan, with Normal, putting pedestrian safety variables into features into that street in the future, and emphasizing pedestrian safety to where we're going to discourage vehicular traffic. You know, that's always been a major corridor for city traffic. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to learn after we do what we are planning that it's going to become less of a thoroughfare for city traffic.
We're not going to want to widen anything. We're going to
right.
choke it off.
Okay. A lot of traffic bumps, huh?
Traffic's going to have to move further out.
So. Well, there's less and less residential properties up through there. So
that's correct.
As you make that, put the islands in and make that more pedestrian-friendly, possibilities of making it one-way or?
To be determined. We have a master plan committee that works with the city, and we have city representation on that committee. That option's been discussed. It's not been received with a lot of favor.
As a general rule, the less one-way streets you have, the better off you are.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
As a general rule.
Right.
They found that in business. They found that in retail, and I would think that would apply here.
We are yet to come up with exactly what we're going to do with this street. We only do know one thing for certain, that we have a problem at the moment at the Ogden campus with vehicular and pedestrian conflicts.
Right.
We're going to have another situation right here for that, meaning the street is going to be crossed at places other than the crosswalks regularly once this building is in place. So we're going to have to plan for that, and we are in the process of doing that right now.
At one point or another, perhaps it would help if, and of course, I don't know whether city, state, or whatever, if Chestnut Street could be widened, that would alleviate some of your traffic.
Well,
that's probably way down the road.
Not into my yard, you don't. Not into my yard, you don't.
We'll do it on the other side. We'll widen on the other side of the street.
When you get into the president's yard.
Something that we've talked about with you before is that we are now getting closer to realizing the opportunity to award a contract to an energy saving performance, or create a contract for an energy saving performance contract, ESPC. And the company that we would award a contract to is in the process of being identified. We have narrowed the proposals from 7 to 5, from 5 to 2. So we're now down to just two candidates for a contract. The two candidates are very large, successful, experienced firms, and we're confident that once we do award a contract to them, that there are a multitude of opportunities on this campus for us to have them invest dollars into our buildings with their money, with guaranteed savings that pay for the improvements that will be made to our buildings and systems. What you're seeing here is merely an example of a Metasys energy management system screen, as well as a panel, control panel, and a lot of what you end up with these systems doing for you is giving you more centralized control of energy consumption and measurement of energy consumption to where you can manage that. And this is just an example of one of the systems we have today. I see us expanding that and improving upon that, being able to manage our utilization of our natural resources. Next project on the list is the South Campus interior renovation. What you're looking at there is an example of some interior conversion of interior space at the community college out on 31W Nashville Road. So we are in the process, as you see, literally right now, of converting some space that existed into a new use. The use for the new space will be for a food services option, another mini food court that's being planned for there, a bookstore, an expanded bookstore program, an extension of the main campus, and additional office space for the community college. This is a project that will encompass in renovation 9,900 square feet. It is in, here's an extra shot or two of its current condition. You can see that it's taking shape. Most of the mechanical and electrical systems are in place. And it, too, is scheduled for completion by August. We're going to have a busy summer. Another project that we've reported on to you before is the Phase 1 of the Science Campus renovation, in this case, Snell Hall. We would estimate our construction progress at this point to now be at 29%. And as you can see, it's made significant progress since our January meeting, where I shared with you at that time some slides of the site. This, once again, is a building that will contain 82,600 feet, and it will include the biology, chemistry, and computer science departments, 27 labs, 7 classrooms, 3 lecture halls, and coincidentally no offices. This is the architectural rendering of the building, looking at it from Chestnut Street, with Thompson's center wing directly behind it. This, too, is scheduled for completion in the fall of 2010. Project we probably not have talked to you about before is the renovation and conversion of the space in the academic complex where the health services department moved out of. So you just toured the new health services, and now they've moved in, and we're already under renovation of the space they vacated. This will be the home of the new public health department that will be moving in, if things go the way we plan, as early as July to be ready for the fall semester. How many times have you heard me say that today? We're going to have a busy summer. We're trying
to get the final design.
Huh?
Is that the final design?
That is the layout of the space and how it will be allocated.
So is that the old or the new?
That is the new.
Purple represents faculty offices.
I believe it does.
I ask because we tried this year to get a 24-hour study room, and they brought up perhaps we could have one in that renovated area. And I haven't really heard anything about it until now.
I don't know.
I was not aware there was ever any.
How many floors are being renovated? The first?
Oh, just that one wing.
Just the one.
One level, one wing.
Yeah, there's not very much space there.
And they had a very limited budget. They're trying to get it all under our course statutory limitation of $600,000. So they had a ceiling for a budget, and they have also, of course, a schedule crunch that they were trying to accomplish. So it's a combination of meeting the needs within a specified time and budget.
That's fine. You need
that to be a computer lab?
No. Well, our concern was that there's nowhere on campus you can go and study for 24 hours a day unless you count mass media, and it's a computer lab. And you have a few tables on the floors. I spoke with you, and then I spoke with other people about this, and we thought it would be best to have it around mass media because it's a building that's already opened up 24 hours a day. And they said there wasn't room in here, plus with the addition of Einstein's, which is a late-night dining option. And then we talked about academic complex. The scene is to be renovated right here. Maybe that's ideal. But I think we just kind of dropped the ball on it.
Well, I don't know if we dropped the ball or just haven't been able to identify where that can happen yet. But duly noted, and let's stay focused on that.
Okay.
This is a shot of its present condition, and as you can see, it's coming together. And we're not concerned about schedule. That's the long corridor you saw in the diagram. Okay, project that was recently added to the approved budget for repair would be. What you're looking at there is an existing repairable defect in the Fikes field. So they asked me, what do you want me to take a picture of? And I said, well, go find some of those defects that we got to fix, and so we can illustrate an existing problem that exists on the field. And so what we have here are there are sections that's repairable, but at the same time, this field is going to need to be moved to properly position it as part of the stadium renovation. But we're not going to be doing this between now and August. This is going to be repaired, used for the season, and be done in preparation for the 2009 season.
If you're wondering what the $700,000 or so contract with the UK game is going to be used for, you're looking at it.
New field. That's right.
John, when you say effects, do you mean product effects or just problems where it's torn? Or, I mean, is there anything?
Those are seams that have become unattached.
And the company that we bought this field from is no longer in business.
Oh.
That's the first thing.
Is there insurance?
And it's always been a challenge for us from where the seams have been sewn. and it's 7 years now, and they never could give us a total life expectancy because it was a new product. We're not the only school or the only program to be with this company. We've gotten good use out of it, but it's time to replace this with the latest technology and also move the field because of the design of the stadium renovation. The new sidelines are very close to the side of the field, designed that way because they knew that the field was going to slide about 10 to 15 feet toward the existing stands and center with the scoreboard and move the goalposts and be a much better balance for us.
$700,000 is going to cover the cost?
Yeah, most of this, all the subsurface work is very good. You're just talking about removing the track. We have an existing track that we need to move with the new track that's being completed across the railroad tracks. We'll just be able to come in and lay an entire layer of synthetic surface from sideline to sideline, end to end, so it'll all be synthetic surface within the stadium. And then, again, the subsurface work's all been done, and that's done very well.
Drainage and all that is in, so it's a new carpet.
So how long, what's the lifespan of this?
Well, when we bought this field, we were told it was anywhere from 8 to 12 years. The actual fibers, you can see the fibers there, they're not in bad shape. It's where the sewing was done and where it was all put together that's where we're getting most of our problems.
But all that's going away.
Yeah, when we remove the field, a company that's been around and has had a great track record with fields like this that we've kind of earmarked for our next field that we'd like to work with them to go
to. So the new field that's going to be available 2009 has got about a 10-year life.
They're 8 to 10 years.
And it's not, I asked you before, but tell me again, this stuff that you're hearing on the news now about some...
Right. Our company is not, the company that we've been with is not being implicated in those.
Is any of those type fields causing that stuff? What is that? You know, that disease, some kind of cancerous disease that's being caused.
Yeah, I'm not up to speed on all that, I must admit, because I know that ours checked off, so I checked out.
Checked off and checked out, huh?
Yeah.
It was all over the news this morning I was listening to it.
Yeah. Right. But the most harmful.
Yes, I need to read the paper.
the worst thing for our field now is the UV sunlight rays. The way the field's designed right now, they're so strong synthetically that the most harmful impact on the field is not day-to-day use, not people running up and down the field. It's the UV sunlight rays and how that impacts the fibers on the field. That's where your life expectancy shortens. And there are people that talk about putting a cover on their field to lengthen that life.
Even faded.
Let's go to the landfill. Yeah. What do you do with the old Kenny recycling?
Great question.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll work that out with the replacement company.
While we're on the subject, here is the latest photographs of the current status of the Halton's L.T. Smith Stadium. As you can see, seating's going in. The superstructure for the roof system is up. Actually, I think this photograph is now dated by a week or so, and there's even more seating in. What I wanted you to benefit here was to simply realize that it's taking shape. Seats are getting placed, fundamentals are getting put in, and it's coming along to where we will start taking beneficial occupancy of the building this summer, and it'll be ready for use for the football season in September.
Good. Long way to go.
On the east side stadium, this photograph is just, if you had never noticed, the previous press box and roof and so forth was in pretty sorry condition, and this is showing you how it's already been improved, and that part of the building has been completed, and it is in much better condition than it was in the past. And this is repairs and work that's being performed presently in the east stadium And so simultaneous with the construction of the west, there is a renovation of the existing east going on at this time.
And there are football games scheduled for there for the summer, like an East-West All-Star or something?
The Rafferty's Bowl has been held historically in late August. We have respectfully declined this season, knowing that we're going to meet every day before our kickoff on September 20.
I was wondering how that was going to
back up.
Yeah, how that was going to work.
As a part of the building construction and renovation process, we relocated the track. I think we shared this photograph with you before. The significant difference is now we have recently applied the surface coating to the track, and so it is ready for use. I think you saw last night on the news there was an announcement about this particular project, but there are a few other projects that we will cover with you here today, but I thought I'd let you become better acquainted with Helen Severs, who I just introduced earlier. She's relatively new to our campus in terms of being an employee for us in our planning, design, construction department, but she's been working with us on our master plan committee, very familiar with our campus. So I thought I would let Helen share in the presentation today and take it from here.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. Tom Hiles referred to this particular project earlier in his report. The site has been selected for a baseball clubhouse adjacent to the existing batting cage facility, which is the indoor facility right there. So it's basically right on top of this tennis court is the site that has been identified for the clubhouse. And then this is the view looking the other direction, so you can see its relationship to the new West Grandstand, which is up here, and also to the Preston Center, and then also across the South Lawn. The project calls for 8,000 square feet under roof, and it's a $1 million budget. As Tom mentioned, that's in private funds that are they're well on their way to being raised. The project's in the design phase, and here are just a few renderings of that project. It's a nice area over there. This porch will face the seating area sort of behind the dugout. And do we call it a beer garden?
What do we call it? No, we don't call it that.
the little area off next to the dugout, that'll all have a nice relationship there. I need to learn more about what we call things over in the baseball area. And here's something else. I can't tell you much about this, except that it is the electrical distribution system. The phase four renovation was completed this spring at the academic complex.
Is this the thing that conked out in the fall?
Yes.
Okay.
We made it part of the project.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was over spring break that this work was completed. And I appreciate the detailed questions y'all have asked on this presentation so far, but I cannot answer anything about what we're looking at in these photographs. So. But it is 100% complete. That generator was started up successfully. So that project, which was a $2.3 million budget, is complete. That was restricted funds on that project. And then moving on to the next one is classroom improvements. The total for 2007 and 2008 is more than $1.7 million in classroom improvements that are funded by Academic Affairs. And those are a range of projects, AV equipment and furnishings, and basically those are being implemented according to a list of priorities. And then we're jumping way off campus for a moment. This is one of the new projects on your list, the Owensboro Administration Building. It's shown here in orange, this Phase 1 building. This is a greenfield site, and if I understand the orientation correctly, this is south and west of Owensboro. The KCTCS campus is across the road. This is an elementary school here. So Ross Tarrant has developed this entire master plan concept for this area, and then this phase one building, the administration building, and this parking are a $6 million budget. The project is funded by Davis County Fiscal Court, And the completion is anticipated for fall of 2009, at which point WKU will assume operation of that building. Now back to campus. This is the existing Preston Center, and this is one of the projects that had been vetoed in 06 and was restored this year. Thank you, Robin Taylor. What's shown in yellow is the addition, the proposed addition to the Preston Center. So you can see its relationship to the South Lawn and its relationship to what will be the new plaza entering the West Grandstand. It's a $10 million budget on that project, funded through agency bonds. The utility relocation for that project will begin in May. There's a major line right here. So the relocation of that outward will start in May in preparation for a summer bid date, and then in late summer, beginning of that project. In that same list of projects, vetoed projects that have now been restored, is the Van Meter Hall renovation. And the two new elements are this stage house, which will be at the rear, and this wing here. The budget for this project is $17.5 million in agency bonds. And similarly, we're trying to get a jump start on that project by beginning with the asbestos removal in Van Meter Hall in June. And then July 1, again, is the start date for when we can do the bidding and begin construction on that project. One thing you haven't seen before that I thought we would like to share is an interior shot. I know that when this exhibit was presented, there were still some decisions to be made about color schemes and so on, but something that I really wanted you to see is this feature right here. Some of you may recall the Four Seasons, the four statues that used to be on display down at Snell Hall. Highly valuable Italian works of art that have been restored, and they will be on display in permanent homes in these niches along the two sidewalls. So you see one here. There would be one further up in the auditorium on this side, and then similarly on the other side. And then we'll also gain more seating in the auditorium when the AV booth that's upstairs is able to go away as part of that renovation. So it's going to be a wonderful new performance space inside, using some artwork that has been part of the campus for many years. Then another hilltop project. This is the faculty house. This is not a current photo. You can perhaps tell by the clothing of the folks in the picture. I think this is taken from the 50s, but the building dates from 1921, and it would get points for green building now, if such a thing existed in 1921, because this was the house was built at the instigation of students. There was a blight of the cedars on the hill, and the logs that had to be cut down were used with the use of student labor to build this building. So that was a great example of use of a resource that otherwise would have been disposed of. But over the years, the building has needed some attention to bring it back, to restore its structural integrity, and that has been done this year. The roof, the gutters, the windows, the doors, subfloor, what am I missing? The chinking, the utilities have all been replaced. What that does is it secures this building for and extends its useful life by many, many years. You may recall that this area here had been enclosed, and we've restored that porch on the side there. And we're looking at some plans to make this this front plaza area more workable, so that the whole thing works nicely as a gathering area, not just the part of the porch that's undercover, but also out into that yard space. And then I wanted to show you a few shots of the interior since it's been restored. These are some new lamps hanging here that I think really fit nicely with the quality of the log house. And then the furnishings that have been selected. This was just taken yesterday, so this is coming along nicely, and it will be available for special events. Yes, starting any time now. Yeah.
So that's not going to be the faculty house anymore.
Oh yes.
Yes. It'll still be the faculty house.
Well, Aramark will work that out. Aramark will manage the food service and it'll be a, something that will be very inexpensive and intended to be convenient and low cost for faculty use or for departmental use or wherever on campus, but day-to-day general faculty use.
The project cost for everything I've identified is $330,000, and as I mentioned, the work is now complete, with the exception of that that exterior work at the entry. I have four projects to cover in the remainder of this presentation, and they all come sort of under the umbrella of placemaking, which is design jargon for how we make this a memorable place. And you're wondering why I'm showing a picture of gravel parking lots to talk about placemaking. But what we've been trying to do in the implementation of the campus master plan is put people first. This is first and foremost a pedestrian campus. But we recognize that many people arrive at campus by automobile. So what we're trying to do is make a coherent arrangement of parking around the perimeter of campus and preserve the internal core of campus as a place for walkers. A place that is walkable is generally a place that's memorable, and this is a very special campus, and that's something that we really want to continue to improve as we go along in the implementation of that master plan. What we're looking at is the view down from Van Meter Hall to 14th Street and to the rebuilt College Heights Boulevard. These were the first two phases of a $2.195 million restricted funds project. And then we've had several other projects that are now nearing completion in that project. Here we're looking from the vicinity of the Feltz Log House down toward Kentucky Street. This is a project, this lot is currently closed and in preparation for regrading and resurfacing to increase the quantity there. This is another view of that lot looking now down Kentucky Street toward the Clinical Education Complex. And then a view from further up the hill looking down at that same area. But in addition to those parking improvements and those actual street improvements, we've also done some pedestrian safety intersection improvements. And if you drove past Cherry Hall any time in the last 4 weeks, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We had a profound traffic calming thing going on right here while this was under construction. But this rendering gives you an idea of the finished product. And this is the type of thing we're looking at doing elsewhere. The subject came up earlier when we were looking at the College of Education building and its relationship to MMTH on Normal Drive. This is brick pavers that help to define the crosswalk. We've narrowed the roadway. And what that does is it reduces the crossing distance for pedestrians on each leg of that crossing. And it also announces to motorists it's time to slow down, put down the cell phone, and pay attention. You are in a pedestrian zone. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of thing that we want to do elsewhere around campus. I'm all for I-65 being able to move cars as quickly as possible. But when we're at a campus and what we're trying to do is get pedestrians safely from one place to another, we want traffic to be able to move, but move slowly. So this is an example of how we're going about doing that. We sort of think of it as our first test case of a new palette of materials to do that. This is the view from Cherry Hall looking down College Street. As you can see, the blacktop work is now complete. The red brick pavers are in place, and we'll go back in and enhance these utility strips as green space here. And then this is the view toward the new College Hill lot. Again, what this wall here will do is provide both a seating area. This is a popular pickup and drop-off spot. It gives people a place to sit and wait, and that also helps to screen the view of that new parking lot there that was also funded through this project. Okay, another piece of placemaking has to do with our campus lighting. We have this shown as our old standard. We actually had 17 old standards. There were 17 different types of outdoor lighting fixtures on this campus before this project began, and here's an example of what we're putting in. And with the completion of the current phase of lighting, we're looking at just shy of 300 fixtures being in place on campus. And those fixtures, what they provide is uniform lighting with a uniform fixture. That means that as you walk through campus, we have fewer pools of darkness that you have to navigate your way through. but all of our pathways are better lit. And then it's a project that started the implementation in August of 07 and will be complete by August of this year with this phase. There will be some work remaining in the area of the Ogden campus, but we'll initiate that after the as those projects come online. The last thing I'll just say briefly, this particular one shows a cap on top. What those do is in the vicinity of the planetarium, they reduce the amount of uplight, the little bit of lighting that goes up. These fixtures, unretrofitted, send about 6 to 7% of their light upward, and with that cap, it's only 2 to 3%. So that's really something that we could do to make the planetarium as viable as it can be for the type of astronomy work that goes on there. So that's campus lighting, and now the South Campus expansion I view as another important piece of placemaking in addition to the facilities that we're providing. But the facilities themselves are impressive. It's a 45,000 square foot addition, which with those paired cupolas, you know, provide a landmark to that campus location. And inside that expansion are 66 offices, 16 classrooms, and 6 labs. So it's quite a bit of additional space. And then with that, 478 additional parking spaces were provided in the first phase of construction. And the budget for that entire project was $8.5 million, and it was complete in January. And here you see green space where none existed at the South Campus. So again, that idea of placemaking, making this a place that people remember. And let's see, I have only one item remaining. And that is the pedestrian wayfinding and signage program. And I realized after I put this map in, it's already out of date because this is a project that's been going on for a few years. But this doesn't reflect the changes at 14th or College Heights Boulevard. It doesn't reflect the Health Services Building. But the big picture here is we want to make the campus easier to navigate around. Once you arrive, I think one great thing that we have is a lot of ambassadors, which is basically anybody you ask on campus will tell you how to reach the place you're looking for, but it would be nice if you could sort of do it on your own a little more. And that's what the signage program is about. And what we're doing is identifying different districts, the Residential Commons, the Centennial Mall, College Heights, the Ogden campus, the Valley, athletics, and then several remote parking areas. And what we've been able to develop working with the Campus Master Planning Committee is signage standards for that. We're proposing large, monumental, directional signs that help you as you're approaching campus. There would be one located at the top of College Street at Cherry Hall. This particular one would be located at the corner of Normal and University Boulevard. And so we're basically looking at every campus entry point. This is something that where the letters are large enough that you can read it from a distance. You can read it if you're approaching at 25 miles an hour, and it will help you at that decision point, at that intersection, before you find yourself lost on going the wrong way through a one-way pattern, and so on. So that's what we're working toward, and I just have a few other images to show what those will look like. These are the smaller signs. On the left are the smaller directional signs, and you'll see these more frequently at decision points for pedestrians around campus. Finally, the building signs. These include the WKU logo. They repeat whichever district you're in, and then in large, easy-to-read letters, the name of the building. This was the first prototype. This was actually built last year at the Pioneer Log Cabin. The signs that we'll be implementing beginning this fall will include that the logo with that red bar, and our goal is to get signs in place for every one of the buildings on campus. The budget for this is $500,000, but included in that budget are also some sidewalk and crosswalk improvements that will make our 1.25 mile loop and our 2 mile loop, the perimeter walking loops around campus, more readily available and better signposted for all. There will also be campus maps installed in the landscape that are just a repeat of the visitor's map that you can pick up as a brochure or that you can print off online. So we're just trying to make everything a little bit more coherent among the different ways that you can come to campus and get information.
Helen, question.
Yes.
$500,000 paid for by what?
The funding for that is...
restricted funds.
Restricted funds.
University.
Okay.
Small projects, pool and facilities. That is funding a number of projects. That money has probably been in place for 2 years. In a small projects pool and facilities budget.
Is this something that could be deferred?
Probably could.
We have postponed making signage changes for quite a while with this project on the horizon, and now we've reached the point of working out all of the design issues in order to move ahead with the implementation.
And they're great signs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're absolutely great signs, and you're right that certainly something that helps navigate is very nice. But certainly you're aware that that's one of the concerns that employees in both faculty and staff, and students too, have is this stuff looks really nice, but is it something that we can do without when faculty, staff, and students are all doing without in a tough budget year?
Again, recurring and non-recurring funds, different uses. You couldn't use that money for a recurring purpose or to offset a recurring factor.
So it's one time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a project that when the money's spent, it's spent, and they're there. And I mean, it is just one-time funds that have been set aside for that purpose for some time. So. Anything can be deferred or not. Well, I won't say anything. Anything that hadn't yet started, hadn't yet signed a contract for, can be deferred. But yeah, it's a judgment call as to what do you continue to do and what do you not do. And understand the differences in money, recurring, non-recurring, and what the funding sources are. So the answer is yes, it could be. But then you pick some other project to use that money for. And then that becomes a judgment call.
Just be aware. That is, I mean, you know, don't say you weren't told that criticism that's going to be leveled.
But I've said that at every public opportunity. The most difficult part about a budget reduction process is the frustration people have with seeing this done here while you're cutting back over here and both happening at the same time, and it's a very difficult circumstance. I agree. That not everybody's going to understand why something... Well, I mean, of course, some things must go forward because contracts are signed, and I don't know whether anything's signed or not. But I do know that work's scheduled for this summer, so I don't know where we are on the contracting.
Compromises being made with the academic mission, these are just concerns people have. They're real, they're important, and they affect every constituency on this campus. And it's a point of unity.
There are 7 pieces of art that will go in this summer. They were commissioned a year ago and have now been finished, and 5 of which have been delivered, 4 of which have been delivered, 3 will be delivered in the weeks ahead. That will go in this summer, that contracts were signed and work commissioned a year ago. That's going to be a lot more difficult than most things.
Are you going to put those out?
Well, either that or we just keep them in storage. But yes.
Okay.
I mean, if you've already paid for them and...
I know. That's the difference.
Was it not you I spoke to about that? I thought it was you.
It may have been.
About not publicly displaying it.
Well.
There's also a difference between something you've already paid for. And I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between something you've paid for, which you've commissioned those, you paid for them, they're going to be delivered. If this hasn't been commissioned yet, it's a thought.
No, it's a thought. And it's a fair thought.
It's a tough balance to strike. I'm thinking about Ms. Gray's remarks when John first got up to speak about how the campus being an inviting and welcoming place is one of the biggest selling points that the campus can have. And to the degree that we can create a campus that's friendly to visitors is an important part of that. This is just one piece of sort of a long-range vision that has been playing out over the course of several years now about how we deal with vehicular traffic and how we deal with making it a pedestrian-friendly campus.
One can never determine precisely, but it's my strong belief that the reason our applicant pool is strong and our enrollment is stable and growing is because of the things that Ms. Gray mentioned, that Helen has mentioned, as to why people like this place. And I live in fear that if we begin to change or retrench on the things that people like about this place, our very financial underpinning can be affected in terms of the pool of students that want to be here and want to come here. So, I mean, it's a lot of dynamics in place, and continuing to rebuild the campus and improve the place itself, I think, is a fundamental part of the enrollment stability that we've enjoyed for the last dozen years or so.
Since I've brought up the campus, one of the stories that I was told, a mother and her daughter and a gentleman who brought them down here, who graduated from WKU, brought them down here to see this campus before she made a final decision. And she was making a choice between U of L and WKU. And when she came here and saw the campus, that turned. That was it. She's going to be here. It's much better than a metropolitan scattered, and I live closer to Louisville than here, and I'm there a lot of times. But this is a defined campus, and they don't have that luxury, or they haven't made it. So they haven't chosen to make it a defined campus. So just one piece of the whole big puzzle of what makes it good or great.
I've been reading through some of the correspondence between Dr. Cherry and Henry Wright, who was the landscape architect that consulted with him over a 30-year period on this campus. Wright was based in New York City, but he came to Bowling Green as often as possible due to his strong relationship with Dr. Cherry. And a lot of the buildings that we now appreciate as the core of the campus, the Hilltop, were built during the Depression, you know, which was a time, obviously, when resources were very scarce. But
built with public funds.
Yeah, and the correspondence is a lot of it is about making difficult decisions, but then making the extra effort to do something right and make it beautiful, that's the legacy we had to work with. I mean, Wright was, he's one of the giants in the field of landscape architecture, so we have, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of giants in that way.
That is our report. That was our last project to report on. Any questions about any of the beverage
products? Thank you for your good work,
John.
Where are your tennis courts going to be?
Well, we'll still have two. We'll be down to two. No immediate plans to change those final two. As I told somebody one evening this week, when that same question came up, I said, you know, our campus has a lot of uniquenesses and qualities that we need to nurture, but it is not a campus that lends itself to available open spaces to put flat surfaces that take up space, like interior parking or tennis courts. And we're just going to have to be content with a couple of tennis courts, and our tennis team will use the Caracas Park facility as they have been using for the last several years, and will continue to do so.
Bring them out there at the intramural place,
Perhaps that probably wouldn't be a good place for students to use. And those tennis courts are only used for casual student use.
I didn't know there was any out there.
No, there aren't any out there. But the three on campus are only used for casual student use and not used for athletics at all. And so we'll be down to two.
Well, we can find a building to put them on top of.
Okay, that'd be tough to go get that ball. You just sit over the fence. But,
they have them on the tops of buildings in New York City.
That's what I'm saying.
The high fences.
Dick, Wireless Campus.
Hello.
You're the finale.
I'll be brief. The core implementation of our wireless network was completed last August, as advertised. Since then, we've been working in four certain-related areas. First, we've been working with Student Residence Life Corporation, with all residence halls wireless. We've completed 9 of them. This semester, we're working on McCormick and Lincoln. Second area is we always reevaluate, continuing to expand outdoor areas. Look where students congregate. Sometimes we get faculty requested. They like to take my class out. For them to sit on the lawn. They want wireless laptop, and then we'll take a look at that as well. The third area is new construction and upgrade construction projects. We work, for example, on the publications building that you saw today, and the health sciences, the stadium, the new Ed building. All of you involved in all of that, and we'll continue to do that. And the fourth area is expanding our wireless network into a mobile learning network, which I told you before, by making it not just useful for laptops, but also useful for mobile handheld devices, like the Apple iPhone. Yes, I use Apple products. This summer, we're going to be doing a couple pilot projects with BlackBerry smartphones and the iPhone. Because Apple just released their SDK, which is the system development kit for this phone. We have that, we're evaluating it, and we're going to be creating these projects using that specifically aimed at our students on this iPhone. We're excited about that. And of course, they'll be able to access with the iTouches and the iPods as well. So that's where we're at. I see us staying on this vein, this handheld mobile vein now, and just tweaking our wireless network as needs occur over the next couple of years. We have about 3,000 students accessing our wireless network every week. And I see that going up with the addition of the campus.
How much of our South Campus all of the South Campus is as well? So that's a lot of progress in a short period of time.
We're getting some good research. You don't even know. Any questions?
Thank you.
Could I make one more statement, please? I thought Ann was going to call on me when we did the radio TV. I would be remiss in not telling you, as I told the committee earlier, that the Kentucky Associated Press gave us 12 awards this year for the news coverage. 5 of those were in first place awards, mm-hmm. 2 of which were large market areas. Ben Ivan, can you please stand? Ben's the head of our news department. He himself received 2 awards. One for a report on methadone and one for a report on Kentucky law enforcement. So congratulations to you and your new staff. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all of you to make sure you let Liz know which of 3 of the graduations you will be attending, dinners, breakfasts, and let her know that as soon as possible, if you're going to attend or not. Do we have any projection? Do we have a committee date for June? I have written in my calendar on the 27th. Do any of the rest of you have that written down?
That sounds right.
The 27th.
27th of June is a committee date, and maybe that would be the same time we could do budget. What? June 27th? Okay. So that's a date we have, and if that will work also for budget. We were saying the 27th of June. We already had that on for committee. Maybe
yes.
We can get that on one trip.
Okay.
Sure.
Good.
Anything else?
June 27th?
Yes.
Okay. Ann's not here anymore, is she? We had a class to teach, actually, this afternoon. That will work. If there are edits or amendments, I'm not sure what day of the week the 27th is, but the first...
Friday.
The first was probably Monday or Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Not much time to make edits or adjustments if there are any, but we'll make that work. I'm just saying, if there are any changes that the board would suggest in the approval of a budget.
For July 1.
Huh?
For July 1.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll have it to you in advance, and so the onus will be upon all of us to study it in advance of the meeting, and if there are concerns, we'll need to know that when you get it, not wait until the meeting to learn it, I guess is the best way I can put that.
So flag things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so we have the benefit of as much time as possible to adjust if necessary.
And after you studied it, if you have some concerns that, or there's things that people need to work out more information, the earlier we let them know, the better it will be for Ann, I'm sure, to be able to do that. If we better know ahead of time. It was good that Tamala could be with us for half the day. You know, she's still having her challenges with treatments and. It was wonderful that she could be here for us. It's great that you're all here, but I'm just saying, I know that for her, it was a real challenge and a real effort for her to get out today.
Keep sending her notes or emails or calls or whatever. She's fighting through it. And Liz, three or four more treatments? Are you...
Two.
Just two more?
Two.
So,
and then additional treatment throughout the summer. So August is when it ends.
And our friend Earl, I think Liz talks to him once in a while, and he's doing quite well. Likes to hear from people.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
So just in taking care of each other. Okay. Mm-hmm. Gee, you going to be with us on the committee meeting date?
I don't believe so. For my wedding.
Little Clark.
Gee, you are so organized.
Is that weekend? That's a lame excuse.
Thank you to all of you committee chairs, too, for the work you've done.
Jeannie, when are you getting married?
June 28th.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I thought you were going to be
on the 27th.
Yeah, what's with that?
Why can't I make it?
Hey, you know.
Jeannie, the 27th is my wedding anniversary, and I'm going to be here. Lord willing.
David,
she rolls with the floor.
We can have a baptism here and get you married.
Can't play golf with the weather.
Thank you all.
All right, good to see you. Safe journey.